Welcome to the Psychedelic Diaries. I am Ray Christian. Oh boy, we have a show for you today. We will be discussing cannabis industry lessons, psychedelic matching, and AI in psychedelics. Dr. Joe Tucker of Enveric Biosciences will be here for a deep dive and a soul search. But first, as usual, let's start things off with a nugget and a noodle. In today's news nugget, Oregon lawmakers decided their legalized psilocybin programs starting next January must use naturally produced magic mushrooms. And the move was made to prevent influence from big pharma, but it ends up being bad news for synthetic manufacturers. Let's keep an eye on this one to see if Oregon's maneuver is a blip or if it sets a trend. And as for the noodle, something I've been noodling on of late is psychedelic matchmaking. Now, psychedelic compounds cause very different experiences. There are various use cases, and people around the world have divergent needs. Maybe there's a way to play matchmaker and create a healthy ecosystem where biotech companies, clinics, and consumer psychedelics all work harmoniously. Let's try breaking it out into a few cohorts. The first group, those with PTSD or treatment-resistant depression, perhaps start with MDMA to remind them what joy feels like. The second group, those struggling with anxiety or depression, are recommended to K clinics to get to baseline. And then the third group, those that are already at baseline, have some experience with altered states, but are feeling dissatisfied with life, perhaps travel with psilocybin and LSD. And finally, the fourth group, those looking to optimize human performance and enhance neuroplasticity. They get the full menu, all the above, plus others like San Pedro, ayahuasca, DMT. A psychedelic ecosystem with precision medicine for all, where every sector in the industry wins, from biotech to the guides. Something to noodle on. Our next guest is the CEO of Enveric Biosciences. He founded Magic Med, then successfully facilitated the always tricky M&A process. Dr. Joe Tucker, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ray. Great to be here. I'm really honored to have the chance to chat with you.
Oh, it's a pleasure. I'm excited for this interview. Well, let's get cracking here. Joe, at Enveric, you have the Psybrary, the psychedelic library, a clever play on words, and you have PsyAI. And it feels like you're positioning to be kind of a fundamental layer of IP for psychedelic derivative development with cutting edge tech. And I'm curious, from your point of view as the leader, as the tip of the spear, what's coming up for Enveric that's got you excited?
Thanks, Ray. Yeah, you're right. Psybrary and PsyAI are these two great tools that help us to make new molecules. You know, we're inspired by nature, inspired by these molecules that have been used, honestly, traditionally, in some cases, thousands of years. So they're clearly showing some kind of benefit. But, you know, we come to this with a real pharma bent. We recognize that the value here is very, very significant. And so pharma bent says there's a real opportunity to make new and improved molecules. So the things that we are working on that I'm super excited about are our lead molecules. One is what we call a Gen 2, which really means a prodrug. And the other is a Gen 3, completely new, completely novel molecule with completely new characteristics. So both of those we're working on, you know, very busily. In our main science lab, we have something like 15 folks with PhDs and master's degrees working on this. And so this year, we will be doing what's called in the pharma world, candidate nomination, taking this large number of molecules out of the Psybrary, running it through PsyAI, and also doing a lot of benchtop work on it to pick the very best molecule, what we think will be the very best molecule to have a psychedelic, hallucinogenic, yet novel molecule to take forward. That's the Gen 2. And then the Gen 3. So we're actually targeting non-hallucinogenic molecule. And, you know, if we can get the same kind of benefit that we've seen with these psychedelic agents, if you can get the same benefit, but with maybe a modified, a muted hallucinogenic experience, that becomes a very, very accessible pharmaceutical for patients. So those are the two things, those two molecules the candidate nomination and then beginning the formal, they call IND enabling studies. That's what I'm super excited about. So when we go from what we've been since inception of, we had this great idea, this, you know, all these awesome molecules and this great way of filtering, to go from that to here's our lead, lead number one, lead number two. That's what I'm pumped about.
Oh, that's wonderful. Very exciting. And I like this idea of taking AI to kind of gear towards this precision medicine, to find the absolute best molecule for a group of people or maybe even just one person, and to apply tech and the psychedelic. It just seems like kind of a brave new world. And by the way, thank you for what you're doing. This is bold stuff, and you're a bit of a maverick, even going back to your cannabis days. And now, of course, in this wild west that we have in psychedelics. So thank you for what you're doing, Joe. Speaking of what you did in cannabis, you were the founder of Willow Biosciences. You've got experience in that industry. What lessons do you think we can take from cannabis and apply to psychedelics?
Well, yeah, you know, gosh, there's so many parallels, and yet there are differences between the two sectors. But, you know, there are some great learnings we can take away. So number one, what a lot of people overlook is the regulatory aspect, how challenging it is to get something approved by the FDA or Health Canada or EMA. And frankly, you also have to deal with the DEA too. But that regulatory aspect is very challenging because those bodies tend to be very conservative,
yes.
Right? They're stocked with people that, let's just say, they've been around a while, they've seen a lot of things, and they are not incentivized to take big risks. So that is a big challenge that cannot be underestimated, how conservative those folks are. Another big challenge that we learned in cannabis, and it will absolutely translate to psychedelics, is when you're dealing with these natural molecules, right? These natural compounds, be it cannabis or, you know, psilocybin. When you're dealing with those, they're very difficult to protect with intellectual property. And, you know, intellectual property is a big mainstay of how the pharma industry survives. So, you know, we saw that on cannabis, there's really only one company, GW Pharma, that got a drug approved with any kind of intellectual property protection on a natural molecule. So natural molecules and generic molecules, they're so hard to protect. It, in my mind, what that tells you is actually you should try to make something new, something which is not only new, but better. Because if it's better, then there's a reason for you to have intellectual property protected. Just putting IP around something nature already created and that people are already using, to me, that's wrong, right? To me, that doesn't make sense. If we've actually created something better, yes, by all means, right? But if all we're trying to do is protect something that nature already made, I'm not on board with that, right? That doesn't fly for me. So anyway, protecting is very, very challenging with these naturally sourced molecules. And then the final thing is, when we go from, and we saw this in cannabis, the initial excitement, everybody said, wow, you can use cannabis medically and, you know, potentially as a pharmaceutical. You get a ton of excitement about it. And a lot of folks come to play. Looks great. And then when the rubber meets the road, ultimately there's less people that survive, right? And you're seeing the same thing in psychedelics, and you will continue to see that. And so what's the distinction? And the distinction is the folks that actually, the management team, have done this before. They've actually done drug development, and that you have real assets, not just hand waving, la la la, but, you know, actual new drugs, new molecules, patents, you know, those two things. You need the managements and the real assets to survive that transition from, it's all great, to, oops, the rubber's meeting the road. So all of those are, I think, are great takeaways from the cannabis sector that completely apply to psychedelics.
Oh, that's so well put, Joe. And I love this idea, that basically it's almost like a false equivalency. Not all patents are made the same. Some patents are patent trolling, where it's like, hold on, this just doesn't pass the smell test. Others are, no, this is IP. We're developing something new, and IP is a good thing, and it's okay to make money. It's good to have IP. It enhances innovation, encourages innovation. So I love that concept. And you said something about the DEA and the risk-taking, and it's a conservative bunch. Quick follow-up, Joe, since you've seen this space, what is the name of the game while we're here? Is it just patience for the DEA and FDA? Can we lean on them a little bit? Or do we just kind of sit and twiddle our thumbs?
Well, you know what? It's actually, what it actually comes down to is these folks are, you know, they want new and improved drugs to hit the market, but they don't want to let through something that they shouldn't have. They don't want to be stampeded into something which is maybe not safe. And so the whole pharma industry has built around the regulations that the FDA and its equivalent in other countries have put in place to say, this is how we make sure that this treatment will not harm people, right? Number one. And so there's this whole list of standard things that they do. And in something like psychedelics, you come along and say, ah, but those rules don't apply to me because this is different, right? This is, it's psychotherapy and it's a trip. And so those rules that you like to apply, those don't apply. And as soon as you say that, the FDA or whomever is like, oh, no, right? So you really, what you have to do, and this is why the bar is higher, is you have to both satisfy all those standard things, all of them, and you have to acknowledge that this is a new paradigm. It's coming at it from a different direction. So you also have to prove why your new paradigm is real, is legit. So that's why the bar is higher, and you can't try to push your way past the FDA. You can't try to bluff them, right? You have to satisfy them because they're going to be skeptical, and that's their job, right? Their job is to protect society from people that are just trying to blast right past them.
Huh, okay. Don't bulldoze the FDA, the DEA. Maybe more of a kid glove approach. I appreciate that. Okay, Joe, I love your take, and I'm curious, switching gears a little bit to kind of the entrepreneurial bent, you have been a part of now, I believe, three acquisitions, Willow, Trillium, and of course, Magic Med. And congrats on that, by the way, no small feat. For me, I look at you, and because I tried to pull off an acquisition, we had some AI tech, tried to do it, and didn't work. And we had sold a product before, like a product suite technology, when we tried to sell it. And that was work. And I figured, oh, I've done this before. I got this. And when I went and tried to sell an entire company, that was a horse of a different color. And I kind of got, like Mike Tyson said, everyone's got a plan until you get punched in the nose. And it's a hard process. And I'm curious for you, what advice would you give entrepreneurs that are looking to position towards an acquisition?
Yeah, awesome question. And you're right. It's been quite the experience to go through, you know, several acquisitions, as you just mentioned. I think there's a couple of things. So kind of like the FDA and these regulatory bodies, and in particular in the drug development sector, which is what we're in, you have to assume that the people on the other side are going to be very skeptical. Hmm. Everything you say, they're going to be very skeptical. So the first thing actually one should do in the process is pretend you're the other person. Hmm. and ask yourself the really hard questions. Psychedelics, you know, how exactly does this work? You know, please explain to me how having auditory and visual hallucinations solves your depression. Explain that one to me, right? What's your mechanism of action exactly? Yes, it hits the serotonin 2A receptor, but you realize these molecules hit five other receptors. You do realize that, don't you? And what's that effect, right? So to put yourself from the other side and be totally skeptical about what you have, it is like first thing you have to do. Hmm. The second thing you have to do, and in doing so, you have to be intellectually honest with yourself. Hmm. And I'll tell you one thing that really goes a long way in an acquisition process is if you are very I won't say critical, but very, very objective on what it is you have. And not be all bullish and not be all, oh, we're going to the moon and this is going to cure everything. But to say, we got one thing that looks pretty promising, but there's some risks with it. And here's all the challenges. And here's the things we still have to do to get anywhere. You don't come across as naive. You come across as understanding what you've got. So I think those things are really important as well. And the last thing is you really actually have to have something, right? You have to have, actually, there's two more things. You have to have something that's legit, that's protected. You need real data, asking real questions. And again, in a pharma sector, and you need to have, solid IP. You said, you know, there's a difference between IP. There so is, right? A method of use on a molecule that's been around for 10,000 years has almost no value when you actually are trying to commercialize it. There are all kinds of ways to get around that. Whereas a composition of matter on a new molecule, totally different, right? So you have to have real data, real IP. And probably the last thing is, and this is giving away a little bit of the secret sauce, right? One of the biggest things to figure out, in particular in the drug development industry, is the major players, they always want to have backups. They want to have backups. So what you need to find, and often they don't tell you who they are, you need to stumble across very often which companies have programs in your field, right? They are working on exactly what you're working on, the mechanism of action that you are working on, and they've got two they're working on right now, and they want a third one as a backup, right? That's how you meet them. Is they like, well, let's check these guys out for a backup. And then as they go forward, your data proves itself, their stuff's not so great. All of a sudden they say, let's make the backup one of our leads. So that's a big one, right? Is you're solving a problem for them as opposed to you're just trying to sell yourself to them.
Oh, that's good. That's really good. And I love your initial point of being intellectually honest and kind of arguing against yourself, kind of like a good lawyer would do before a case, try to figure out how to argue both sides. And quick follow-up to that, do you think as you're going into these discussions, or when you're in the discussions, do you like to actually bring up the elephants in the room? Say, like, we know we might not be great at X, Y, and Z, and here's why we think that's not an issue, or do you wait for them to bring it up?
No, you bring it up right away. I mean, this is how you demonstrate your own credibility. Is right away, you're like, check out this herd of elephants. Look at them all, right? And here's the, you know, you want to have an answer for them or a strategy. You know, elephant number one, yeah. But how are we going to deal with it? Here's how. Elephant number two, yeah, but here's what we're going to do with that, right? So that's what shows the true credibility and that you know what you're about. And so, you know, everybody feels going away from that, okay, there's not stuff that I'm missing. You know, that's when people feel uncomfortable, is when you say, you know, look, we're going to the moon. There's nothing wrong. No, so you want to bring it up. The sooner you bring it up, the more credible you appear.
I love that. That might have been a mistake that I made. Thank you for that candor, Joe. That's really cool. So switching gears a little bit, the last question for the deep dive and kind of taking a step back, bird's eye view at the psychedelic industry. So you've been obviously in the cannabis industry. You saw that arc where it was kind of awareness and then medical legalization, and then obviously full-scale legalization. Who knows? No one's got a crystal ball. No one really knows how the psychedelic will play out. But let's just say Canada, US, Europe, they actually legalize it. Even for maybe those dispensaries, and obviously, of course, for medical purposes. How might that impact your strategy at Enveric, or do you not even care?
So yeah, you know, it's a great question, and you're right. We don't know what's going to happen with this. It always seems initially like, oh, it's never going to happen. You got to be kidding me, right? But these things are all legal in like 1969, so it could happen, absolutely. And you know, I think going back to cannabis, there's a great parallel again with that one drug that was approved in the sector. The GW Pharma product, Epidiolex, right? So there was a boost, I would say, in the sales, actually both ways, between the OTC and the pharma. So the two ultimately are probably going after different patient populations in reality. The people that want to go to a dispensary are actually probably largely different from the people that want a doctor to write a prescription for you. They just are. So when you have something like legalization, I would not expect it to actually eat into your market, if you will. But what it should do, what I expect it to do, is be actually a great boost through destigmatization, right? That's probably one of the biggest issues that the psychedelic sector has to address, is the stigma of, you know, of course, many people embrace psychedelics, but largely when you think about doctors writing prescriptions and patients. So, you know, our lead program at Enveric is cancer-related distress. Cancer-related distress is generally not 24-year-olds, right? Generally not. It's generally people much later in life, much more conservative, much less likely to be excited about taking something like psilocybin, right? They're just, you know, their whole life, this is a bad thing, not excited about it. Stigma. So having this become legalized would probably help destigmatize it. And so you would see more embrace on the pharma side. So I actually think it would be a great boon. And the only thing that I would hope is that it didn't open up, as we saw, that caused the shutdown of psychedelics in the first place. We saw it getting used in a really uncontrolled, you know, out of control kind of fashion. And in the wrong dose, in the wrong hands, these things can cause or potentially psychotic breaks. And that's why everything got shut down. So we would not want that, right? We would not want to repeat those mistakes of 50, 60 years ago. But outside of that, I think it would be a big benefit, honestly, to both sides.
Oh, I love that. It's like the rising tide can raise all boats on this. And I'm with you. I think things got a little bit too out of hand 50, 60 years ago, and we forgot. And maybe they just didn't know just how important intention setting is. And there's medical, there's recreation, but there's also that middle, like it's intentional use that's respectful, appropriate, responsible. And I think they can kind of feed each other. And I love this idea of boosting the destigmatization. That's good stuff. Joe, that was a fantastic deep dive. We got to switch over now to the Soul Search speed round. So Joe, you get to relive the life of any historical figure. Who you got?
Mahatma Gandhi.
Gandhi.
In one second. Yeah.
Appreciate
that. There's a guy who stood for service to others and was willing to pay whatever price it took.
Well put. I like that answer. Joe, question number two. You're launching a new company. Let's imagine Enveric hits all the heights and you sell and everything works out the way you dreamed. You're going to start another one. Go back to the drawing board. And you are choosing your first co-founder. Would you rather have someone that talks too much or talks too little?
Oh my God. Talks too much. Absolutely.
Oh, okay. I like that. Okay. Question number three. Joe, you get to talk to the Joe Tucker from 10 years ago. What piece of news about you would tickle him the most?
All your dreams will come true, Joe.
Wow. I love that.
Which is my way of saying all of my dreams have been coming true. So that would make me pretty happy to know that 10 years ago.
Oh, that's cool. Sounds like you've had a nice run. And judging from what we found researching you, I'm not surprised. Okay, Joe, last question. Question number four. Who is one person that has had a dramatic impact on your career?
Wow. My dad, actually. My dad sent me down this path accidentally. He tried to talk me into biotech when I was a kid, and I said, no way, I'm not going to. He's a professor of biology himself. When I discovered it was apparently genetic for me, he was a great inspiration as a result. So I'd say my dad.
Oh, that's cool. I'm sure that would warm his heart to hear that. And I've had this thought recently around, you know, you try to give advice to people you love, and sometimes it's good to remember that if you plant that seed, it may take months or years for it to bloom. And it sounds like it did with your dad and you. Okay, Joe, where can the viewers find you?
Well, there's, of course, our website, Enveric.com, but we're also on social, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, the usual suspects.
Wonderful. Joe, this was fantastic. Dr. Joe Tucker, thank you for joining the show.
Thanks for having me, Ray. It was a great time. Anytime.
Okay, so next week we will have Daniel Carcillo of Wisana Health. Thank you for watching this episode of Psychedelic Diaries. I'm Ray Christian. See you next time.